Welcome to Better Cybersecurity, the ISF podcast. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF Chief Executive Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve is joined by former FBI agent Eric O'Neill. Eric is a cybersecurity expert and author, but he's probably most well known as the man who brought down Peter Hansen, a Russian spy who became one of the most notorious double agents in the history of U.S. intelligence. Steve and Eric discuss cyber preparedness in today's business world, insider threats, and cyber resilience in a rapidly changing world.
Now, we often talk about cybersecurity as a technical challenge, a battle of algorithms, architectures, but if we actually peel back the layers, we find that pretty much every major breach shares a common denominator, and that's the human being. Whether it's motivated by ego, ideology, or indeed good old financial gain, the human element remains our probably most volatile risk and our most vital asset. Now, today on the podcast, I'm joined by someone who's lived at the real sharp end of that reality. Eric O'Neill is a former FBI counterintelligence operative. He's a national security strategist. He's also the author of a couple of books, of which Grey Day may well be known to our listeners. Because in that, he outlined his probably best known role in the capture of Robert Hansen, who was certainly one of the most, if not the most, notorious double agents in American history. Eric, it's great to have you on the program.
Steve, it's great to be here and to talk about everything related to espionage, spies, lies, and cybercrime.
And spooks. We talked about
spooks. That's right.
Indeed, for our British listeners. Now, Eric, you've spent your career in this world of spies, but as you look at the corporate landscape today, do you see a C-suite that's really ready for a world where the enemy within is no longer a sort of a plot point in a thriller, but is actually a line item on the risk register?
Great way to put it, Steve. And I run a company called NexusSure that does cybersecurity advisory services. So we are working with these C-suites, and I can tell you that they are not ready. Across many different verticals, we've seen that what cybersecurity in general and companies is not prepared for is this massive and growing wave of cybercrime. You can set espionage aside. If a foreign intelligence service like Russia or China or any other threat actors are coming after you, it's a good chance they're going to get in and you're never going to know they were there. But what most corporations and companies must worry about critically, it should be at the top of their risk portfolio, is cybercrime, which is the fastest growing business on earth.
Yeah, multi-billion dollars. Incredible, isn't it? The speed at which it continues to flourish.
Trillions of dollars. Trillions. In fact, just the cost of cybercrime moving through the dark web, which is an anonymous system of servers that exist all over the world in many places that law enforcement can't intercept or shut down. And that is how these cyber criminals, which are organized into these large sophisticated gangs that model intelligence services, they're using the dark web, the anonymity of the dark web to launch these attacks. The last good analysis of the cost of cybercrime moving through the dark web is over $12 trillion. And that was years ago. It is significantly greater than that. So that means that dark web cybercrime would be the third largest economy on earth. So let that land for a moment. That means that it goes to the US and then China in terms of GDP, and then the dark web before Germany or Japan. And that is significant, which means there is so much cybercrime out there that it is not a question of whether you will be attacked, but when you will be attacked.
So why is it then, Eric? I mean, you just really articulately put the size of the challenge. Why is it that the C-suite still don't get it?
It's budget. It always comes down to budget. Organizations have not yet organized enough budget to attend to this threat. And that can be, penny wise and pound foolish is the old saying.
Yep.
Because what happens is you are placing your eggs in the basket of luck, and you never want to do that with your organization and hope and prayers. Because when the cyber criminal attacks, they have a couple of pressures that they must do. They have to create an insane amount of urgency on your organization and put you in an incredible pressure situation. So that means they're going to exert the most damage. They're going to look for the most complex and difficult information for you to lose. And they're not just going to destroy or wipe or encrypt your information. They're going to steal it and exploit it. This double exploitation attack to get you to pay, because they don't win unless they get paid. They will put an immense amount of work and effort in the old spy parlance, we call it reconnaissance, to learn about you and find your weak points and then launch the sophisticated attack, often today that is assisted by AI. But they must get you to pay. Otherwise, all that work goes for naught. The difference between espionage and cybercrime is really just the outcome. They use all the same tactics and techniques they've learned from each other. But spies want to get in and get out without you knowing and steal your data. Criminals want to destroy everything on their way out and make you pay.
So how can a CEO of today build a culture of vigilance without descending into a sort of culture of almost paranoia that just gets in the way?
There are plenty of tools out there. And one of the most important things that a company can do, a CISO can do, a CIO can do, is to have a vulnerability assessment. That's where you start.
Right.
If you can't do it yourself, and many small or mid-level companies don't have the capability. In fact, we're seeing some enterprises who don't have the capability to do this themselves. You bring in someone to come in, like we do this. We look at where your flaws are, where your problems are, where the seams are between the connections in your data. The other thing that we've seen is that a lot of companies don't even understand their data architecture. One of the most important things that you can do as a company is know where your data is, who has access to it, and when they have access to it, and then compartmentalize it, which is the spy term. Today in cybersecurity, we like to say segmentation, which is not as cool. I like the for your eyes only James Bond parlance, right? And the idea is that everybody shouldn't have access to everything. And now that's not as typical anymore, but you want to have your information segmented in a way that if an attacker gets in, and they will, they only can get one bucket. They can't get the whole bevy of information that you own. So getting that analysis done is usually fairly cheap, and it can tell you where your problems are. And then you need a trusted advisor, or you need a company to come in and say, here's what you can do to map your data, to understand where your biggest pressure points are, and here are the technological solutions that you can use to get you a chance against the enemy. And the next problem, unfortunately, that CISOs make and CIOs make is they think it's set or forget, and it's not. Mm. Once you have the analysis done and you've invested in the correct cybersecurity technology, you can't just rely on the technology. Humans still have to defeat humans in the spy game. And what I say in my book is there are no hackers, there are only spies. Cyber criminals are identical to spies in the way they attack. So in the spy game, you need a human to stop the human who is using a computer to attack your people. That is how the criminals are getting in.
It's good to hear you say that there's still this role for the individual. I mean, all too often, people talk to me about how excited they are about the latest toy, AI typically, and how it's going to save them all of this cost because they won't need as many people and so on, which in my humble opinion is absolute nonsense. But it is startling how everybody seems to be singing that same song, you know, this view that we can do away with some of these key resources and spend our money on technology instead. But as you say, you still need the individual that is in there, the human touch is still going to be there. But that in itself raises another interesting question, doesn't it? Because we're seeing a rise too of the insider. Now, whether that be the malicious insider or just the unlucky, incompetent, or whatever it is insider, tell me a little bit about that. How can we help the people be more effective in the jobs that they're doing?
Well, once upon a time, I just so happened to have gone undercover and caught the biggest trusted insider in history. So I know a little bit about this topic. You know, Robert Hansen had betrayed the entire intelligence community here in the U.S. for over 22 years of his 25-year career as an FBI supervisory special agent, an agent who was in the top echelon of counterintelligence. In fact, he was a spy hunter, but also a spy. So he was like the bank manager stealing from his own bank.
Right.
And today, yes, because sometimes cyber attacks are hard, and particularly when a threat actor really wants in, sometimes it's easier just to rent someone who's already on the inside. And the three old school ways to turn someone to become a traitor still work. ideology, you think more like me, and we agree on more things politically, religiously, in your background, right? So you should help us. Good old-fashioned bribery. You need money, and I've got it. I can make your problems go away. And then, of course, using information against the person.
Right.
Now that you've started giving us some secrets, we're going to tell everybody if you don't continue to spy for us. Or I've got pictures of you doing something that you shouldn't have done. And if you don't spy, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. Those three methods of recruiting someone still work. Now, the other thing that we have to worry about today is because we're in a world of cyber and we're in a world that is incredibly small because of communications, but also very disassociated. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is we went through that thing no one talks about, right? We pretended it never happened, but it's like screaming Voldemort in the world of Harry Potter, right? COVID, the pandemic, which changed everything about how we work and the technology of how we work. Now you look at organizations that are called hybrid first, which means that even if groups have come back to the office and are working together, which is the best way, by the way, to share information and know that you're not being fooled, they still might have someone who's working remotely. So you have to have that screen where they're popping in, right? What that's created is an immense ability for particularly foreign intelligence services, and North Korea has pioneered this, to create entire fake individuals with fake resumes and CVs and backgrounds and educations. And what North Korea has done, for example, is rented servers in places in the US like Arizona. And then they have their spies apply for positions at organizations all across the US and other places, in the UK included, and then get jobs. Because recruiting, especially when someone is remote, tends to be a little lazy. And companies have forgotten to do background investigations. They do the criminal check, but in many cases, they're using a stolen identity, so it comes up clean, and it has a real social security number. Then they get the jobs, and they're not only making salary that they use to fund their espionage, but they're stealing secrets. And if you think that this is a small thing, I mean, they were able to infiltrate Amazon, you know, a company who is at the top of the line in security. Yeah, we really do have to worry about the trusted insider. And then, of course, you have rogue employees who get angry. And you have what I coined in my first book, Gray Day, and then I take to the next level in my second book, Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, the virtual trusted insider. Right. This is the identity that has been stolen. With so many organizations, we see the biggest mistake an organization can make. They don't turn on multi-factor authentication. It boggles my mind that everyone hasn't done this, because it is the most important and simplest thing you can do to protect yourself from cyber attacks. So their usernames and passwords have been lost in breaches or leaks, or they've been leaked to the dark web, and attackers will just go buy these from brokers. There are many different business verticals in the dark web. One of them is brokers who take these usernames and passwords and sift through for good logins to organizations, and then they sell these logins to cyber attack groups who know that it is a good login to use to infiltrate a company. And if you don't have two-factor authentication, that password isn't going to protect you at all.
No. We're entering this sort of, we have entered rather, a very much more complex world, haven't we? What are some of the things that people can do? Because you made the point that people are just not doing the adequate checks. What would an adequate background check look like for most organizations?
Yes, certainly. I do have a company called the Georgetown Group, and we do this, so I know a lot about it. And what most organizations do is they will pay a fee to a company. Their backgrounds might be somewhere between $10 and $50, which will get you nothing. And it just does a light criminal and civil case law background check. Right. And so they're just looking to make sure that you don't have a criminal history. And in some states in the US, by the way, you're not even allowed to look at that. And making sure you don't have significant issues like civil litigation or bankruptcy or that sort of thing. Things that will pop up very fast, but they don't look deeper. So the critical thing here is, if someone is a key employee, obviously if they're the C-suite, but someone who has access, and I would add to that every single person in IT that is a systems administrator, who can elevate privileges, who can create accounts, who can reset passwords, those tend to be the most targeted individuals in an organization, and the accounts, the individuals, the roles that attackers most want to compromise. So if I was going to seed a spy into a company, that's exactly where I would put that person, a systems administrator that has access to all the data. And often teams, because they are monitoring databases, because they are setting accounts, they actually have access to all the data in a company, which is a problem in itself. So they tend to be the biggest targets. And of course, the place where you want to do a lot of diligence to make sure that one, it's a real person, it's not a North Korean spy. And two, that person doesn't have proclivities or problems in their background that could suggest that they could be turned in the future, become a disgruntled employee, or just defraud the company.
You've also said that hackers don't break in, they log in. So if the traditional perimeter is actually dead and gone, what does the new perimeter of trust, if I could put it that way, look like for a multinational organization?
I love the way you put that. Exactly. There is a new perimeter of trust. And what I've said now is that trust, especially in a world of AI, is an uncommon commodity. It's one of the most valuable things that any business on earth can aspire to. Not only that your customers trust you with their data, with their information, but also that you can trust that those you are working with, you're partnering with, you're employing, that you're collaborating with are who they say they are. Mm-hmm. And when I say that what criminals are doing is logging and not breaking in, is I'm trying to dispel the myth of this hacker, right? Kid in a basement, black hoodie over his head, typing away at a keyboard, hits one key and says magically, I'm in. Mm-hmm. That is not how cyber attacks are working. What attackers are doing is they are exploiting the individual. So they learn about you. They learn about your company. They learn about your employees. They're using a lot of social media reconnaissance to learn whatever they can about your employees. And then they're social engineering their way in. So they are impersonating or using confidence schemes or deceiving employees into opening the door for them. And here's a great example. What happened to MGM in November of 2023? If you've ever been to Vegas, Las Vegas, I end up speaking there a lot because there's a million conference centers and they're right near the airport and they're easy to get to. MGM, it turns out, owns like half the hotels in Vegas, big casinos. Mm-hmm. And over a weekend, they all practically shut down with a very large-scale ransomware attack. The way the attack happened is a very sophisticated cybercrime group called Alf5, plus their partner cybercrime group, Scattered Spider. I know they all have silly names, but I think they read a lot of comic books. They are pioneers in social engineering, in fooling help desk teams. And they called the help desk and pretended to be one of their systems engineers. Because they had learned all about this person through social media. So they knew their challenge questions. They knew who they reported to as a supervisor. They knew all sorts of things about their background. And they had a pretext. I can't use my phone. It's not working. I can't get into my two-factor authentication. And within a 10-minute phone call, they were able to have his username, password, and two-factor reset. Mm-hmm. Just 10 minutes. And it was a 10-minute phone call that led to one of the largest ransomware attacks in history. MGM lost over $100 million in 2 weeks. And they haven't reported quite how much they lost in total, but it is significantly more than that. Didn't pay the ransom, but they had to do all the work to make sure that those attackers couldn't get in again. And by the way, MGM had incredibly good cybersecurity. Their people were fooled, not their technology. So that is the way that attackers are getting in. And time again, in my new book, Spies, Eyes, and Cybercrime, I tell example after example of how this has happened, including a cyber attack that almost got me. Right at the end, I I learned that this was a scam. And I tell that story not just to completely embarrass myself and put it right in the front of the book, but to be able to say that if it can happen to me, it can happen to you.
So what is it that we can do to try to raise the level of skepticism, awareness, training of individuals to guard against some of these things you've just been talking about? Because as you've just pointed out, we can all fall victim. It's very easy to do.
Yeah, this has been my mission for about 2 decades now. Way back when I started professionally speaking, I transitioned from telling the inspirational story of catching Robert Hansen into what we need to do to protect ourselves from cybercrime. And I was one of the first people out there as a strategist who was saying, hey, stop thinking about hackers, start thinking about spies. And what I meant by that is we need to elevate our thinking and not think of that kid in the basement, but start thinking about the enemy being very sophisticated cybercrime groups with multiple individuals, complete business verticals, including recruitment, HR, tech support, e-learning platforms to train the next generation of cyber criminals. and very sophisticated AI that's dark web AI, not like our AI that we use at ChatGPT and Claude and Gemini and Copilot that has guardrails set around it.
Yeah,
their AI will do anything that they ask it to do. It is evil and depraved and will write code for them and will help them brainstorm attacks and make sure that their phishing emails have perfect grammar and perfect spelling and are written exactly the way their target writes, because they will give it samples. And that's what we're up against. So we have to elevate our thinking and think of this as the most critical threat, the biggest risk to any organization. Because attackers don't care who you are. They don't care what you do. They don't care whether you're big or small. They only care whether you're vulnerable. And if you are vulnerable, you will be attacked by a cyber criminal group. And if you don't prepare ahead of the attack, then you'll be a victim.
So it's about being prepared. It's about trying to build in some form of resilience. You've mentioned the need to try to silo the different level of data, a bit like a submarine, really, so that if you've got water coming in one part, you shut that bit off and the submarine still manages to operate. All of those things. People listening to this will be saying, okay, I get that bit. But when we've got an adversary that is using AI in the way that you've just described and that can mimic, you know, a CEO's voice or the writing style with this very, very high degree of accuracy, what can I actually do about it?
There are a few things. So in my new book, I have a methodology. The book is in two parts. The first part is explaining the six different ways using traditional espionage techniques that attackers are exploiting us with lessons. And it's written to train you to think like a bad guy. Right, which is cool, and it flips it on its head for cybersecurity. It's almost like a cyber attacker's Bible, right? And it teaches you how to do it so that you recognize it when it's coming after you. The second part of the book uses a methodology that I developed called PAID: prepare, assess, investigate, and decide, right? Four quick steps. Everybody can remember PAID. You prepare ahead of the attack. You don't wait for this pressure situation to examine your cybersecurity, to put the right technology in place to give you a fighting chance. And the policies and procedures, those are important too, and training that will teach your employees not to fall for the spear phishing attack from the fake CEO or fake CFO, or more likely today, a voice call or a Teams call or Zoom call from an executive in the company with a full avatar like this talking that says, do something, right? So organizations now have to train their employees, who are the top line of defense against cyber attack. It's the people. It's always the people. It's the humans, right?
Yep.
To develop what I call in the book a cop instinct. And this is where you've prepared and now you have assessment. You're always assessing. That your radar is up. That feeling in your stomach, which is the wealthy of your experience, that something is too good to be true, that something doesn't feel right, that you feel a little bit of unease, that there's too much urgency and pressure behind this request. You know, my CEO normally doesn't use this channel to reach out to me. They normally wouldn't ask this. And then you have to tell them all. You can call the CEO directly. You can reach out to any executive who asks you to do something like this and you don't feel comfortable, reach out through the normal channels, through the proper Teams call or through a Slack channel or through their text number if you happen to have it, and just verify. Verify, verify, verify. Over-verify everything. That can save you from those sort of things. With my business associates, with my family, with my financial advisors at my bank, I have a challenge question, what we called in the FBI a sign of life. It is a word that I know and they know, and they know that if they ever get reached out to me and it sounds weird, hey, I'm in Panama City and help, I got mugged and I lost my wallet and I lost my computer and I lost my phone and I need you to wire me $1,000 really quick so I can pay my hotel. Yeah. My wife's going to say, okay, what's the challenge question? And it sounds crazy, but we have to do that today in a world of deepfake AI. And deepfakes, oh my God, if you just look at what they were like a month ago compared to today, it's astonishing. The fidelity can fool us. During my keynote, I like to show a couple of deepfake videos for the audience just to have a little bit of levity in the middle of talking about all this very heavy stuff. And one is Donald Trump holding my book, Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, and talking about how it's the best book ever. And it looks and sounds exactly like him holding my book. And the next, of course, is Joe Biden, because I'm nonpartisan, doing the same thing with his aviator glasses. He puts them on and off. And I get a great laugh. But then there's a sobering moment when I say each of those took me 5 minutes to make. That's it. 5 minutes to make. And if you were looking at something like that during a campaign ad, which is what we're going to see a lot during our next election, you might be fooled. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're up against with deepfakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, in the industry, we've talked a lot, we've argued a lot about things like active defense, honey trapping, all of that kind of thing. Is there a place for that, do you think, in the corporate world? Or does that create a legal and ethical minefield that most boards really would rather avoid?
I think it's important. I don't know that you need to do this to go after particular employees in some sort of entrapment or just to see. We used to call them false flag investigations. And the false flag would mean that, for example, I worked, one of my first cases in the FBI was an old Cold War spy who had gone inactive, right? Named Earl Pitts. And way later, after the Cold War was long and done in the 90s, we learned that he had been a spy for Russia. And so what the FBI did was, to prove it, sent a FBI agent who is fluent in Russian, who knew everything about the old KGB and the new SVR, to his house to reactivate him, pretending that they were Russian. So they raised the false flag, right? And he started spying again. And we got him for conspiracy to commit espionage. You don't want to do that to your employees. It can be incredibly disingenuous unless, of course, you have good information that suspects, that allows you to suspect that they might be stealing information, they might be defrauding. Then you can run that investigation. But what you do want to do, you do want to use the best in breed technology. And here is where AI is helping cybersecurity to constantly hunt threats. So what I say in the book is you have to hunt threats before they hunt you, right? We must hunt the threats before they hunt us. Actually, I say it in both books because it's so important. You can't be passive. Cybersecurity must never, ever be passive. It always has to be incredibly active in seeking out the threats. That means that you are looking for anomalies in your data. And ontology of data is really important here. And what that means is that with some of the top tier cybersecurity solutions, the technology knows your data very well, knows when people tend to log on, when people tend to be working, who has access to what. It knows when there is a lot of data suddenly leaving, right? It can see the bandwidth. It knows your networks and how data moves. And so the AI can flag, we think there's a problem. And then here we go, Steve, the human has to come in and look at it. Right. And here's the disconnect. So you have this great technology that's looking and hunting and it's saying, hey guys, we see a problem. We see a problem. The AI can't do the next step for you. It's not there yet, but you can, right? Your team can, or your advisors can, if they have access to the data, if they have access to the console that is doing all this work for you, they can see the flag and then immediately reach out to your IT team and say, lock that account, that there's something rogue there and we want to do some more investigation. So paid, right? Prepare, you're assessing, your technology is assessing. And when it sees that problem, when you feel that problem, that cop instinct, you have to investigate. And that's where you put on your spy hunter hat and you go out there and you do your sleuthing and you find out, is this real or is it a false flag? Can we clear the person or do we have a real problem? And the goal for cybersecurity, the real fight here, is we need to win before the bad guys. So when we see that problem, we need to react as fast as possible before the damage goes from minimal to significant.
Fascinating. I mean, Eric, look, we could go on and on talking about this, but I know you've got to run. One last question before I let you go. If you were sitting in a boardroom today, what's the one question you think every director should be asking their chief information security officer? Not about technology, but about the people.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that they should be asking their CIO, right? Or information technology officer, CTO. There's so many different, depending on the company, what they call it, right? If there was a 10-minute phone call to our help desk, would we survive it? Would we be fooled? Because that one question would layer in so many of the systems you need to make sure that you're not just going to be social engineered by an incredibly sophisticated group of attackers who have done the research and the reconnaissance. It goes back to so many things. Are we being careful about what people are posting on social media? Are we taking care to train our employees correctly? Do we have multi-layers of security, not just a username and a password and a text that comes to the phone, but something bigger than that? Have we layered in compartments into our security and our data such that if someone is fooled, maybe they send one wire, but they can't send 10, right? Maybe we lose one drive of information, but we don't lose everything. Right. And is there technology that is going to identify that someone just got fooled on one computer, but won't allow it to spread to every other computer? Just the answer to that question, I would bet you that most CTOs are not going to have a good answer to that question, because this is not the way that most IT people are thinking. They think in terms of tools. They don't think in terms of people, of spy hunting. And that is what I'm trying to change in the way that we're addressing cybersecurity. Cybersecurity belongs to everyone in the entire company, not just to the IT team.
I think that's a really good point for us to end on. Eric, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing some of those insights. And indeed, of course, those exceptionally helpful tips that I'm sure our listeners will be taking away and hopefully implementing. Thank you very much indeed.
Yes, Steve, it's been my pleasure. And if any of your listeners would like to connect with me, they can go to my website, ericoneal.net. I think I have com too, but ericoneal.net. And if you click the banner at the top, you can join my weekly newsletter where I talk about this every single week, just once a week on Tuesday.
Fantastic. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISEV member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.